Welcome, welcome, welcome to a brand new podcast called the Froballers Podcast here at the Ennis Media Studios in central London, Covent Garden to be exact. This brought to you obviously by Ennis Restaurant and Energy God Energy Drinks. Now, this is a very special podcast. This brings me back to my passion of sports across the board. This is where we're going to be looking at sports results, athletes, you know, incredible football players across the continent, across the world. But we're going to be representing African, Afro-Caribbean, and African-American athletes, speaking about the results, the athletes, and some of the stories surrounding our favorite sports. My name is Adeshope Olajide, and I'm joined in the studio by the incredible DJ Wells. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm good, thank you, Ross.
Listen, man, we've put this in testing for quite some time, but now we're officially live, and we can discuss some of the most incredible stories that we've witnessed. Sports is very important to us as Africans, as, you know, as Black people around the world. Mm-hmm. We're very passionate about our football, boxing, basketball, NFL. And I've always felt like there aren't that many platforms discussing the incredible, you know, displays of some of our women and men. What are your thoughts about this podcast and why it's needed at this time?
At a very crucial time, that's the AFCON. I think this is one of the best thing we've come up with.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we as Ennis are supporting this.
Absolutely.
Full time. And I believe discussing our brothers and sisters in sports on this platform will literally help people know more about the culture of football in Africa, you know, discussing about them, trying to see where and how we could help them.
Yeah.
I think for now we're focusing on mainly AFCONs and the Premier League and some of other leagues in the world.
Yeah.
So after that, we'll definitely be going deeper into like life stories, life history of footballers or sports.
Absolutely.
What went wrong, how they did it. So I believe, a lot of people are going to enjoy this.
Do you know the funny thing? In 2007, which is close to 20 years ago, I wrote a proposal for a sports show called Froballers.
Wow.
Where I was going to be looking into the lives of athletes and sports personalities of African descent, initially based in the UK, but obviously based in Europe and in the Western world. I felt that a spotlight needed to be shot, you know, kind of put on these guys and girls because a lot of them give us so much pride.
Yeah.
You know, coming from where we're coming from. So it's an honor to be on the Froballers podcast, even though it's about 16 years, a little bit late. Shout outs to Ennis Restaurants for definitely agreeing with this vision and deciding to bring it to fruition. Now, we're starting in the most entertaining parts of sports currently right now. The AFCON Championships taking place in Ivory Coast, aka Côte d'Ivoire.
Yes.
It features 24 incredible teams across Africa, across the continent, that have gone through stages of qualification and eventually meeting at this prestigious championships. Now, the Ivory Coast government spent, according to the media, over $1 billion. Some reports say close to $2 billion in getting 6 stadiums and over 20 training centers and hospitality facilities ready for our brothers to go in there and go head to head to eventually come up with a champion in the next couple of weeks. Now, the defending champions are the Senegalese, led by the fantastic striker who was once of Liverpool, Bayern Munich, now in Saudi Arabia, in Mane. And the competition kicks off on Saturday. Fantastic opening ceremony. Saw the likes of Magic System, Yemi Alade representing Nigeria, Taik and Daju. What do you think about that opening ceremony? And of course, Nigeria being represented by a queen in Yemi Alade.
Yeah, it was so glamorous. I was like, okay, I think we're getting there.
Absolutely.
I think we're getting there because what we normally focus on before is like, you know, the World Cup opening.
Yeah.
But this was the I'll give it to the
Ivorian organizers. Ivorian
organizers. They really did well. And seeing Yemi Alade kill it again, I love her so much to the point that like watching her again performing her outfit, everything was absolutely on point.
It stood out,
so,
isn't it?
It stood out. So and we saw now we're beginning to see how Nigerian artists, we saw Davido do it in the World Cup.
And saw Burner Boy Champions League. Yes. With, you know, it's a fantastic run that Nigerian musicians have had at some of these incredible sporting festivities. Let's put it that way, and competitions. And Yemi Alade representing at this weekend was also fantastic. Now let's go to the football. The competition kicked off with Cote d'Ivoire and Guinea-Bissau. Of course, being the home team, having the first match under the lights, under so much scrutiny from the press, the supporters really yearning for a performance by the home team. Because we know a lot of these footballing competitions actually do well when the home team does well.
Yes.
So the Ivory Coast kicked off to a 2-0 win. Fantastic. It looked like a routine game and they put up a performance. Definitely, Guinea-Bissau, you can't really call that a massive competition for the Ivory Coast, but a win nonetheless at, you know, a fantastic event like this.
I think for in football, the final result matters. A win is always a win. As soon as they go, the ball rolls into the net, it's an advantage to whoever's got the goal.
Absolutely.
So I've said it before on all our test runs to say, like, the Ivorians at home, with the kind of crowd they've got and support, I see them doing well.
Yeah.
And we saw it in the first game. So it's like a kind of routine game. It's nothing special.
Yeah.
But at least they got the 3 points. And as I said, I want to see them do well because
it helps the competition.
It helps the competition.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm quite happy.
Some of the other results, Nigeria, Equatorial Guinea, 1-0. Egypt getting a draw in the 95th or 96th minute.
Yeah.
2-0 to Mozambique, who had never won a match at the AFCON Championships in the past. Ghana losing to Cape Verde. You've always been consistent about Cape Verde being a banana skin and having fantastic football players. Senegal coming out strong against the Gambia, scoring 3 goals, albeit the Gambians had a red card against them. And Cameroon also going 1-1 to a 10-man Guinea team.
Yeah.
Now, this sets up for incredible second matches where you're going to be looking at, you know, Ghana and Egypt. You're Nigeria. Going to be looking at Nigeria and the Ivory Coast. Let's talk about Nigeria and their draw to Equatorial Guinea. Now, the expectations was that Nigeria was going to walk over Equatorial Guinea, but it looked like they were huffing and puffing the entire match. Yes, there were bright sparks with the likes of, what's his name now? The brother that was from Arsenal went to Everton. And Iwobi was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, Lookman was brilliant as well. And the other defender, the Yoruba defender, I've forgotten what his name is, the right back, was fantastic. But other than those two or three football players, everybody else, of course, you could say Victor Osimhen scored the goal, but he had
loads
multiple chances that he didn't put away.
Yes.
What was your, you know, view of the match?
I think from what I've been saying about the Nigerian team, I wasn't surprised.
Mm.
I knew it was going to happen. We're going to miss a lot of chances, which I've always said, even in all our test runs. I knew that most of our players would be selfish. And when I mean selfish, if you see the game, even though Osimhen missed a lot of chances, we saw a lot of chances where the wingers are meant to square the ball to him. And all he is expected to do is just tap him.
And then it's just and decided to go by themselves, sky the ball.
And this is what I've been saying to say, number one, selection matters. All our passes were not connecting. Only Iwobi's when he did a true pass to Osimhen, which
clean one on one on goal,
he should have finished that as a top striker because we need all our goals. I think this is going to be like a wake up call to all the top teams to say, listen, this is African Cup of Nations. It's just like the FA Cup.
Yep.
Anybody beats anybody.
Anybody can anybody. Be anybody.
So don't go there thinking, oh, we're going to beat these people or we're going to win them. Be ready for anything. So I think we're going to see the second matches now is going to be really interesting.
It's going to be really interesting because there will be things on the line.
Yeah. Egypt almost lost.
Absolutely. Now, since you've picked Egypt, let's go to Egypt. Egypt was down to... They first of all scored the first goal. And then... You know, the Mozambicans came.
The Mozambicans looked more organized than the Egyptians, especially their number 10. He's got a quick leg, a very quick leg. And the defenders were sleeping. On the second goal, he literally caught them off guard.
He caught them off guard. But apart from the play itself, I also wanted to look at the history. Like the Egyptians, you know, seven-time winners of the champion. They were in the final the last time and only lost on penalty. Mm-hmm. They boast a squad that includes one of the best players of the last 5 or 6 years in Mohamed Salah. And they struggled against a team that has never recorded a win at the AFCON championships before.
And that shows how overconfident they are. Because they think, they're just another African team. We will win them. Let's just do our thing. They didn't probably study the Mozambicans well. If they had done that, who knows? They caught the Egyptians off guard and say, listen, we're not here to play. So I think I see them doing well as well in the competition because the first game is just a wake-up call to all the top teams. The next game now, we'll see them all out. And the smaller team, except for Cape Verde, which I love so much, they will definitely be beating the smaller teams in the second game.
Nigeria had a draw.
Yeah.
Egypt had a lucky draw.
Cameroon.
Ghana
lost
to Cape Verde. Now, Ghana looked strong. They had incredible football players. Yeah. Of course, Kudus didn't play. I believe he's probably a little bit injured or something. We'll be getting into the team later on. But nobody saw a defeat to Cape Verde.
I saw it.
I told you. You always called that.
I told you, yeah.
But this, Ghana is one of the big names in the tournament. Going into it with a manager like Chris Hughton, you know, the strikers like the Ayew, you know, like Andre Ayew. They have players.
Yeah, but footballer is no respecter of any man. It depends on how good you are. On the day, it doesn't matter how popular or what club you play for. And if you in the last 4 to 6 years, I've studied these guys a lot. I kept telling people about them. I don't see them winning it.
But they are just going to scupper other people's plans.
100%. 100%. They did it the last time.
Yes.
And they will do it again. You see the way they move, they know what they're doing. They have a plan. And if they keep on doing this, in the next 2 coming editions, I see them winning the African Cup of Nations.
And now they have a lot of football players who have changed their nationalities. Initially, qualified to play for Portugal and now change their nationalities to play for Cape Verde, which means they're going to have a lot of football players who are trained internationally and have more experience playing internationally. Now having the ability to play for their local, you know, for their national team, that puts them in a fantastic position. Ghana, on the other hand, there's instantly an uproar. Whenever a team like Ghana, Nigeria, Egypt loses in such a huge competition, they're calling for the head of the national team coach.
Yes.
They're discussing about team selections. They're saying the players are not dedicated enough, you know.
Stories start flying.
The pressure is mounting heavily. But on the other hand, let's look at the positives. Senegal, going into this competition, you know, huge favorites, are current champions and holders of the cup, and dispatched of Gambia in smooth fashion.
I think they have they had an advantage of seeing teams like Nigeria, Egypt's struggle. I think that must have been a wake up call for them and say, listen, guys, things are happening now. Don't let us underestimate our opponent. And they went into that match as the champions.
Yep.
And they did their job well.
Lamine Kamara is a highly rated young player who's come from the League One, you know, the French League. Mm-hmm. He plays for Metz. He came into France through the kind of scouting route or the same route that a lot of great players from Senegal have done. Mani did the same thing. There's an academy in Senegal that kind of turns them on. But beyond his talent and the expectations on his shoulders, he delivered with two goals today, two goals over this weekend. Senegal as a national footballing team now look so incredible under Alou Cisse, an experienced, legendary captain, former captain of the Senegalese national team. They are now currently the under 17 champions in Africa. Yeah. They are now currently the CHAN champions in Africa, which means that's the AFCON championship by local-based players. They're the current champions. They're now, of course, they're the champions of AFCON. There's been speculation. There's been a lot of conversation about legends like El Hadj Diouf speaking that the government has invested so much money in football over the last 4 or 5 or 6 years, and they're now starting to reap the fruits of that investment with stability across the team, the management, the system, the selection. Are they looking like this, you know, this team that they have and this structure that they have can go on to dominate African football for quite some time?
Yes, because a lot of we Africans don't really study football well. When Senegal started this project, I told one of my boys and I told him, I said, listen, in the next 4 to 8 years, you'll see what these guys will do. It is a project. They let their coach, who is also a legend,
absolutely
do his thing. The government wasn't interfering. He picked his players and they supported him with the funds.
Facts.
So with, and that's what Cameroon is trying to do now with the likes of Eto'o.
Samuel Eto'o.
Yes. We're going to see them come back.
Because Cameroon was also,
a strong African team. Yes. So we will definitely see teams like this come back. And when it starts that way, we begin to see other African countries
follow suit,
which means we get more African players.
The National Football Association was working closely with the national team coach and being supported heavily by the government.
Yes. So, and if this starts happening, if it starts happening, we now see more homegrown African players playing in Europe, which we saw in the last, probably last 10 years, we saw a lot of African players dominate the Premier League.
Absolutely. I watched the documentary on Sky Sports, actually, that showed the history of black players and then African players coming into the Premier League, which I thought was absolutely fantastic.
It was.
And it showed the increase from starting with Ato Walton, the first black player to ever play in England, and then growing into the 50s and the 60s. And then, obviously, the successes that came from the early 2000s, El Hadj Diouf's, and then translating into, you know, your Didier Drogba's, the Toure brothers, and what they did in the Premier League. And
we saw a season where we had the Toure brothers.
Celestin Babayaro, John Obi Mikel.
There was a season where we had the Toure brothers.
Yep.
Didier Drogba.
Yes.
Adebayo. We had them finishing John Obi Mikel. We had at least 10 top players in the Premier League.
Facts. More than that.
And they were scoring goals.
And then you had people, you know, like Benjani and Portsmouth. You had so many other people, Kanu, that came through.
A lot.
But you talk about the homegrown players, and I wanted to talk about this a little bit more, because people obviously criticizing the Nigerian national team, the selection. A friend of mine made a suggestion, which I thought of properly, where he said a lot of the players that were selected from Europe that had just come from extremely cold climates came to Africa within 24, 48 hours and are expected to acclimatize to the humidity and the heat in the Ivory Coast. Whereas there are teams, there are players currently in Africa good enough to play for the national team, been playing under those weather conditions that should have been considered for the national team, just as Samson Siasia had done in the past. And it took us very far. What are your thoughts about that?
I still think for Nigeria, because we sometimes I even see us going to the Championship or League Two to bring
to select
in,
players. They're going into League Three in Belgium and League
To select players. And I think we will definitely not get it right with that. I currently, the NFF have been trying to broadcast, the Nigerian Football League.
Yes.
Way more. I kind of watch it sometimes.
That's amazing.
And the picture quality is good. And I see some mad players, some really good players. I think this guy is good enough.
The national team is crying out for a midfield player. I was listening to
Defenders.
Legend. I was even listening to the legend Amokachi doing a commentary. And he said the team lacks a player like a JJ Okocha
who could grab,
distribute the ball. Even a John Obi Mikel who could spread the ball and take on defenses and put a pass through. For sure, that would reside in the local team. Because internationally, Nigeria is producing a lot more defensive midfield players, of course, strikers, and we're not really producing, you know, midfielders,
defenders,
creative players like we usually do. A lot of those will be back home.
Yeah, almost a few of our defenders currently in this tournament are from, I'm not trying to, to bring down any players, are from probably lower leagues.
Championships.
Yes. So definitely for a homegrown players in some of these teams we'll be meeting, the strength will be there. They will overpower anybody.
And what about the hunger and desire?
Because they want to do well. They want to get signed.
They want to get international exposure.
So You don't expect them to play like someone who is earning like maybe a 50-60k per week in pounds or euro. But these guys are getting paid locally and they have a platform to deliver. They will deliver. Absolutely. And this is what most of these top teams don't know. They need to literally, you know, fight for their life as the homegrown players are doing as well.
Absolutely.
So this tournament, we're going to see a lot of surprises. I keep saying it.
A lot of surprises scheduled. We are currently at the Enish Studios in Covent Garden, London, where, of course, you can get your incredible Enish delicacies. And just in queue, please, we have here DJ Walls.
Yes.
What do we have served here?
Please? So this is the special Enish pop-off.
Okay.
Not your regular pop-off.
This
you can only get it from all our Enish branches.
Around
London and Dubai.
Around London and Dubai.
Yes.
Puff is definitely one of the snacks, Nigerian snacks. It's made of dough. And this time, you know, this has a little bit of syrup in it. Of course, I can't wait to dig in into that. Now, I wanted us to go into the Premier League. This weekend, we had some incredible matches. Aston Villa played Everton. Played Everton. We saw Manchester City play Newcastle, and we saw Manchester United at home to Tottenham Hotspur. Manchester City got almost a last minute winner against Newcastle United. What are your thoughts about that match, especially the return of Kevin De Bruyne?
Yes. I think Newcastle is I'll count them as a top team, which I've always said. The way their coach has really brought them this far, even from last season, we all saw what they did. So for Man City, they struggled a bit, but in a team, you have to have your star player. Mm. And that's what Kevin did when he came on. And that's what I've always campaigned for. As a manager, he knew what to do. He knew they were struggling. He knew he needed...
The game was crying for...
He needed a game changer.
Mm.
And he went for the right person.
What about the young kid and the skill he displayed to score that winner? Taking on the defender, 1-2 pass over the goalkeeper and just quickly just slipping the ball through. That showed a lot of composure for such a young player in such a crucial moment of the match.
He had a chance to make a mark and he took it. Because another player would have stopped. Before he took that kick, another player would have maybe said, oh, let me see if I can. Yes.
One extra but touch.
He saw that chance, boom, he took it. And that literally slipped through the defender's feet just by, I don't know what the measurement is.
Something.
Very thin. And I think that's going to boost his confidence more. And into the next game, I'm sure the coach or their manager is going to use him.
Now, Manchester City, I believe, is 5 or 3 points behind Liverpool now. Coming into the second half of the season, they largely haven't had Kevin De Bruyne, largely haven't had Erling Haaland, but it looks like the team is still firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And listen,
this guy, Doku.
Yeah, that young Belgian.
He's a fantastic football player. So he's been doing well for them this season. And that he's been covering up for a lot of top players who are missing.
Yeah.
And now that they are gradually coming back, playing with him,
yeah.
I still think, I'm an Arsenal fan, I still think Man City is going to win the league.
But let's talk about Newcastle, though. That was a fantastic game.
Yeah.
It showed the level that they're currently at, having to really get Manchester City dig out their best to defeat them in the dying minutes of the game. They've got strikers that are capable of scoring. They've got playmakers that are capable of making incredible plays. Obviously, the defender made a terrible error and was beaten by the pass from Kevin De Bruyne ultimately. But it still looks like Newcastle have the goods to compete at the highest level, and they definitely have the funding. What are your thoughts about Newcastle?
From last season when they got back into the top football, I expected them after last season to at least get somebody. They're missing something. They've got good strikers, but they're missing that. They need a player who is going to literally create passes. They're missing what's his name? Almiron.
Yes.
Because Almiron. He's not really in that form that he used to be.
Yep.
So I just think they need to sign one or two players to bring them back up, because they would have easily beaten Man City if they had that special touch.
Now, from that, over the weekend, Everton stopped the rot. I believe it was 4 games without a win, or 4 games that they've lost in a row, 3 games that they've lost in a row. They had a draw against the high-flying Aston Villa, whose coach I'm definitely eyeing for my team. Now, let's speak about my team, Manchester United against Spurs at Old Trafford. Manchester United, Spurs ended 2-2 at Old Trafford in front of the new co-owner of Manchester United, who was attending his match officially for the first time as a co-owner, announced a new sporting director that's going to be looking into footballing matters, working closely with the coach, trying to find new players for the team, and looking at the way to develop the team onto a higher level. Now, Spurs, on the other hand, have an incredible coach, have been on a fantastic run. You know, Richarlison is scoring 5 goals in the last 6 games. It looks like even though they were missing 5 of their first team players like Song and other incredible players, they still looked a lot stronger than Manchester United. I saw this game as an opportunity for Manchester United to restate his claim that they want to be challenging for the top four space. Mm. And the players still had the belief that they had the ability to take on the mighty Spurs at the moment. Can you imagine? But individually, there were some good performances in certain areas. Wan-Bissaka, you know, you had Rashford score a goal after a long time not scoring at home.
I'm quite happy for him, though.
Absolutely. But a draw at the end of that match with the possibilities that it could be, in my opinion, was still not good enough. Your thoughts?
I still think Man U is missing someone like Paul Scholes.
Mm.
Again, Man U doesn't have any distributor comp, but I don't send it. So Fernandes is going to do it. That's the Portuguese guy. I think he's the captain now.
He's meant to do it.
But most times, I think he uses his emotions too much when things are not going right.
Mm.
And he literally, I know he wants to make a change. He wants to score goals. But use your forwards more. And with for Man U, you need someone like Paul Scholes in it. I don't know what the scouts are doing. They need to get someone in that will distribute the ball. But they looked sharp on that day. But we can't put Tottenham down. They're a top team as well. So I think a draw is still a good result for Man U at this current stage they are now.
Absolutely. And rounding up the podcast this week, we just had the first official face-off between Francis Ngannou and Anthony Joshua in London. This is a highly anticipated fight scheduled for the 8th of March in Riyadh, one of the Riyadh season big boxing nights. This is called Knockout, I believe it is. Looking at both of them, Ngannou looks very relaxed, very confident, having come from a fantastic fight against Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
Anthony Joshua, on the other hand, looks determined, hungry to get back his belts. And of course, another incredible showing in Riyadh against Otto, Wilding, or the gentleman from Spain, Sweden. I've forgotten his name now.
Yeah.
Quickly, what are your thoughts about what you saw today? How excited are you about this upcoming fight? And what can your predictions be, even though we're 2 months out from this fight?
I'm quite excited that Joshua is fighting a top guy who we saw knocked down Tyson Fury. I'm sure Joshua is not underestimating him.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure he is also saying, okay, I know this guy is not from the boxing world, but as a champion, I'm sure he'll be careful with Ngannou not to receive his punch.
Absolutely.
Because he's got a deadly punch. We've all seen it. And it takes a lot to bring down Tyson Fury. Francis did it. So Joshua is a great guy. We love him here at Enish. He's our guy. Yes, he's our guy. He eats Enish. And we will be supporting both of them.
Yep.
They are African brothers. I would say 50-50. I'm not going to be...
50-50 for now. Francis Ngannou claims he wants to test Anthony Joshua's chin. Anthony, on the other hand, has now had the opportunity to watch videotapes of Francis Ngannou fighting Tyson Fury, an opportunity that Tyson Fury never had when he took on Francis Ngannou. A brother from Nigeria, a brother from Cameroon, a fight in Saudi Arabia is going to be incredible. This is the Footballers Podcast here at the Enish Media Studios in Covent Garden, supported by Enish Restaurants and the Energy God. We will be back here next time. It's Shopsy Do and my brother DJ Walls. Let's get back to the Puff Puff.
Yes.
Peace. And we're... Wait. And we're out. Man, this Puff Puff is amazing, bro.